Hi, everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass. It's time for It's All About Food. Thank you for joining me wherever you are and whenever it is for you that you're listening to this program. I appreciate you, appreciate your interest in knowing all that you can about food, healthy food, food that's good for the environment, food that's kind to all living species, and the food system, and all the things that we talk about on this show, which is all about food, especially delicious food. And today, we're going to be talking about something a lot of people talk about all the time, which is weight loss. I want to bring on my guest, Chef AJ. Chef AJ has been devoted to a plant-based diet for about 40 years. She's the host of the television series Healthy Living with Chef AJ, which airs on Foodie TV. She's got a comedy background, and she has made appearances on The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson, The Tonight Show with Jay Leno, The Late Show with Dave Letterman, and more. A chef, culinary instructor, and professional speaker, she's the author of the popular book Unprocessed, How to Achieve Vibrant Health and Your Ideal Weight, which chronicles her journey from a junk food vegan faced with a diagnosis of precancerous polyps to learning how to create foods that nourish and heal the body. Welcome to It's All About Food, Chef AJ.
Hey, thank you. Thank you so much.
Hey, you're very welcome. So yeah. I spoke with you about 4 years ago on this program.
I remember.
I think a lot has been going on with you in the last 4 years. Can you just bring us up to date?
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually wrote another book after Unprocessed. It actually was an Amazon bestseller, I'm proud to say, and it's called The Secrets to Ultimate Weight Loss. And I spent about 5 years writing it because I didn't want to be one of these people that lost weight and then wrote a book and then gained it back. So I literally waited until, well, you know, they say that 98% of people that lose weight, usually through a great deal of suffering, gain it all back within about 2 years, about 66% in the first year and another 22% in the second year. So when I heard those statistics, I said, I'm going to wait. And so I waited about 5 years till I maintained my 50-pound weight loss, and then I released the book because then I felt pretty confident that this was going to stick this time.
Do you have statistics on authors of weight loss programs who gain their weight back?
I don't have statistics.
I'm teasing,
on that,
but it would be interesting to know.
Yeah, I do have colleagues and people that I know that you know, have written weight loss books while still being overweight or that have gained their weight back. And so I just felt like to be, you know, transparent and to be genuine and to show that, hey, no, you know, this works, this is sustainable. I wanted to wait over those 2 years. And I figured, you know, 5 years, I think I got the hang of it. And I think I'm going to keep doing this forever. And I really like it. And, you know, my food is delicious. You know, like you mentioned, I've been vegan for almost 42 years now. I just was inducted to the Vegan Hall of Fame. So that has never changed. So somebody that's interested in doing this in a healthful manner on a plant-based diet, you can do this deliciously, easily, sustainably.
Well, I've only been eating vegan for a mere 30 plus years. I'm not quite up to, but I've been vegetarian for almost, oh God, I can't even count anymore, 45 or something. I don't know. Well, we're getting on. But we have lots of experience. I think it's interesting, a very interesting point you bring up about waiting before you wrote that book to show that it's sustainable and working for you. Because not only with weight loss, but with many self-help programs, there are people that put information out either in a book or on YouTube or in a web series or something. And then a few years later, they're doing like a complete 180.
Oh my God!
I'm
no longer vegan? What, you know, I those drive me crazy. Why I'm no longer vegan? You know, if you did vegan right, you'd still be vegan.
So I'm cautioning my listeners, as I frequently do, about who to trust. Of course, I want to tell you, you can trust me, and you can trust Chef AJ, but only you can figure that out for yourself. But just be wary; there are a lot of people out there that are promoting stuff that isn't really truthful or isn't really healthful or is problematic.
Right.
Okay.
And you know, yeah. I didn't want to be a study of one. And so the other thing I did, which you may not know, is that from 2012, I was running a program that I still run called the Ultimate Weight Loss Program. When I lived in Los Angeles, I ran it live there 4 times a year where people would come to me for 4 consecutive weeks for education and fellowship and food and lectures. And I started running it online in the summer of 2014. So I've had thousands of people now go through the program. And then when I started seeing that this wasn't just me, the people that applied these principles were losing anywhere from 30 to 300 pounds of weight, I wanted to get statistics on other people to see if they could do it too. And so it's not just me.
So where can we see the statistics? Did you publish them in your book? Do you make them available hide them away somewhere?
Here's the thing. I am not a doctor, and I don't have the data to show you other than the people that are in the Ultimate Weight Loss Program. Every Tuesday, they post their photos. They're called Transformation Tuesday. We actually are, my co-author and I are writing our next book about these people, but I don't know how to do scientific data. But a lot of them you can find with their own YouTube channels, like Heather Goodwin, who took off 300 pounds. A lot of these people now, once they've taken off the weight, they're becoming plant-based educators and starting their own groups, you know, to get more people inspired where they live and to get the word out that you can do this. You really can. If you eat the right diet, if you understand what to eat, you don't have to worry about when to eat or why you eat or how much you eat. It's you know, really, it's not much more than what Dr. McDougall has been saying for 40 years.
It's almost a tiring message for some of us, but for many others, it's brand new and needs to be heard. It's just, an interesting thing to hear it over and over again, and it's fresh for so many people. Now, how long did it take for you to attain your ideal weight?
Great question, because I actually just interviewed Dr. Doug Lyle about this, because people are looking for a quick fix. It took me 27 months to lose 47 of the 50 pounds that I've now kept off for over 5 years. 27 months. At the beginning, the weight loss was faster at about a pound a week, but I was losing ounces. He said something like,
"What'd you say?" Oh, are you there?
Oh, right.
I can't hear you now. Is it me or is it you?
This, I don't know. Let me move. I was just sitting
okay.
In a chair.
I hear you now.
Great. Okay, I just moved a little bit. Great. So what I was saying is, I had just talked to Dr. Doug Lyle, the author of The Pleasure Trap, and he estimated that I was losing about 5 to 7 ounces of fat a day. You know, the people look to the scale to see how fast they're losing weight, and you don't lose weight quickly over days, and you don't even lose it over a week. You lose it over months, which is why he recommends we don't weigh ourselves more than once a month, preferably once every 3 months, because, you know, a deficit of 3,500 calories is about a pound of body fat. So these programs where you're losing a pound a day, you're not losing fat. You're losing water. You're losing glycogen, muscle. But if you follow a whole food plant-based diet, you will, over time, lose the fat that you want to lose. And it's not necessarily going to be quickly. It depends what diet you change from. So people that are eating a horrible standard American diet that's very rich in fat and calories, they go vegan and they do lose weight very quickly. But if somebody's already vegan, or maybe a junk food vegan, or eating a pretty good diet but not good enough to facilitate their weight loss, you can't expect the 2 to 3 pounds a week that you see these people that are very overweight losing. Also, how overweight you are will dictate how much weight you lose. You know, somebody that weighs, you know, 200, 300, 400 pounds has a lot more weight to lose. They're going to lose weight more quickly than somebody that's 20 or 30 pounds overweight.
I think the idea is, once you've lost a bunch of weight and you're on the program, just to relax and go with the flow, enjoy your food, and over time, that extra stuff is just going to melt away. It's almost mindless. But you just find, oh, I'm a size smaller all of a sudden. What's happening? But it's like, it's safe that way to go slowly. And it's not difficult.
It's more sustainable, because when you go quickly, then, you know, Dr. Goldhammer has talked about this, is when you lose weight very quickly, it sometimes can even increase cravings, because, you know, in nature, our ancestors were never overweight. If they
started losing weight. That was an emergency situation. And what happens is your brain kicks out these chemicals that tell you to eat, eat, eat. And so when you're losing weight slowly, you don't even notice. Like, you don't get the cravings because it's going so slowly. It's so sustainable because you're eating large portions of satisfying food as opposed to the programs that tell people for quick weight loss, you know, to weigh and measure their food on the plate. The other thing I want to say is, however you lose weight, you still need to do that to maintain your weight. And I think one of the biggest mistakes people make in weight loss is going on a diet. I don't recommend people go on a diet. I eat the same way Dr. Furman eats pretty much and Dr. McDougall, and they're not on a diet. You need to make a lifestyle change. And whatever you do to facilitate weight loss, you better like it, because you're going to have to do that pretty much forever. When you go on a diet, the problem is you go off a diet. And so, you know, who was it? Dr. Goldhammer says you can't eat the same foods that made you fat and sick to lose weight or to even maintain your weight.
The only downside to all of this, and I'm smiling when I say this, is because I eat this way too, is it's harder to eat in a restaurant. And I'm,
yes,
there are just so many places that I'm not even interested in eating because it's not satisfying. It's not as clean as I like. And sometimes I'll eat, for example, something that seems okay in a restaurant, and then we come home and we eat because we weren't nourished or as satisfied as we could have been had we made our own meals. That's the only downside, which really isn't a downside. It's just society.
Right, really it isn't. It can be, you know, all the social situations that come with eating differently than other people, those can be navigated. I actually taught my class yesterday, and that was actually the topic of how to eat healthfully anywhere. It can be done. I agree it's more difficult, especially when you understand the principles of calorie density, which is what I teach, and you require more quantities of food than people that are eating lots of fat and oil and animal products and flour and sugar and drinking alcohol. You need more food. And guess what? In a restaurant, you don't get as much food as you would get at home.
You mentioned calorie density. Can we talk about calories? Do you count calories? Do you weigh food? Do you do any of that?
No, I don't. And calorie density, we could talk about this all day because this is my passion and this is what
I talk about food all day.
Yeah. Well, calorie density is amazing because when I went to the True North Health Center in January of 2011 as a patient, 50 pounds more than I weighed now, I saw the psychologist there, Dr. Lyle, and he basically said to me that I didn't have emotional problems that were causing me to eat and be overweight. He said I had math problems. And when he sat down and explained calorie density to me, my life changed. Calorie density isn't counting calories. It's not about counting calories, carbs, points, or weighing and measuring your food on a plate. Calorie density simply means the amount of calories per pound of food. And this was something that was studied extensively by a researcher in Penn State University named Dr. Barbara Rolls, who wrote a series of books. She's not vegan, but the science, you don't need to be vegan to understand the science of what she calls volumetrics. Food ranges in calorie density, which is calories per pound of food, from about 100 calories per pound, which is non-starchy vegetables, to 4,000 calories per pound, which is all oil. What that means is that there is a 40-fold difference in the calorie density of foods. Now, you don't have to understand calorie density and implement it in your life. You don't have to memorize how many calories in a cup of blueberries or in a half a cup of rice. You just have to know the average calorie density of a few food groups. For example, non-starchy vegetables, 100 calories a pound raw, 200 calories a pound cooked. Fruits, between 200 and 300 calories a pound. Starchy vegetables, like potatoes, sweet potatoes, and squashes, about 400 calories a pound. Whole grains, 500 calories a pound. And legumes, 600 calories a pound. So these are foods that I call to the left of the red line on my calorie density chart. Fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and legumes. And these are the same four food groups that the wonderful Dr. Neil Barnard has on his PCRM power plate. Now, Americans eat less than 10% of their calories from these food groups. They eat less than 10% from fruits and vegetables and over 92% of their calories from animal products and processed foods, which I place to the right of the red line because they have a higher caloric density than 600 calories a pound. what the research shows is if you keep your average calorie density to about 567 calories per pound or less, most people can eat a style known as ad libitum, where they're eating as much as they want, as often as they want, whenever they want, until they are comfortably full, not Thanksgiving, I'm going to throw up stuff full, and they will get very close to their ideal weight. So there is no weighing, measuring, counting calories. It's just eating the right foods. But the problem is most Americans don't eat very many of those foods, even vegans. I've known vegans that eat 100% of their calories from processed foods, from the fake meats and the fake cheeses and the tofu-y cuties and things like that. Now, if you're not overweight or aren't concerned, it's not a problem. But when you change your caloric density of the food groups that you're eating, for instance, cutting out oil is one of the smartest things you can do, both for arterial health, if you saw either the documentary Forks Over Knives or read Dr. Esselstyn's book, Preventer Reverse Heart Disease. So cutting out oil right there, when you cut out a whole food group that's the most calorically concentrated calories, 4,000 calories a pound, which is why eating at restaurants is so difficult because they use so much oil, sugar, and salt. But just cutting out oil, you will lose weight. You know, when we went, we call it SOS free, sugar, oil, salt free, like Dr. Goldhammer at True North coined. I actually add two letters to it, FNA, flour and alcohol, SOFAS free. But just cutting out oil, which is what we did in 2008, I didn't tell my husband that we were stopping oil. Once I heard Dr. Esselstyn talk about how it injures the endothelial cells, which is the lining of your circulatory system, and I wanted to be bulletproof against heart disease, a disease that claimed the lives of so many in my family. I thought, well, this makes sense. I don't need to eat oil. And actually, of oil, sugar, and salt, oil is probably the easiest thing to omit. But we went SOS-free August 1st, 2008. I didn't tell my husband because you don't really miss the oil. You can still use nuts and seeds and avocados if you want some of the richness in your sauces or salad dressings. About 7 months after that, my husband, who was already a lean vegan at 6 feet tall and about 160 pounds, one day we went to a bar mitzvah, and he doesn't normally wear a suit or a belt. He went to put his belt on 7 months later, and he couldn't belt it anymore. It was too big, and we don't normally weigh ourselves, but he stepped on the scale, and he lost like 9 pounds. Now, if somebody that doesn't need to lose weight, that doesn't want to lose weight, that doesn't even know they're being experimented on, could lose 9 pounds in 7 months, I mean, imagine what you could do if you were doing it on purpose. And I said, calm down, you're fine, we just stopped oil. It's amazing when you really understand caloric density, how quickly you'll lose weight, even if you don't necessarily be as extreme as maybe I am and as diligent as I am. You know, we have so many wonderful vegans that have already written books on caloric density before mine, bestsellers. You know, I recently interviewed Dr. Dean Ornish, the first person who successfully reversed heart disease with a low-fat, plant-based diet. And he wrote a book, I believe, in 1985 called Eat More, Weigh Less. And when you understand caloric density, you can eat literally twice as much food, yet taking half as many calories. And I believe 10 years later, Dr. McDougall wrote another bestseller called The McDougall Program for Maximum Weight Loss, which once again is based on these principles of calorie density. And once I learned this, it was like, you know, the world opened up to me because I didn't have to portion control or worry about how much I ate. It just changed what I ate. You change, you know, it's like losing weight with a full plate. It's the people that understand this and implement it, we are so happy because we can eat such large quantities of, you know, oven roasted sweet potato fries and salads and rice and beans, and it's so satisfying. You know, satiation, that feeling you get that tells you to stop eating, believe it or not, that even starts before you put the food in the mouth. That starts with the eyes. And so when you see large portions of delicious food, as opposed to these people that, you know, weigh out their 4 ounces of protein and avoid starch and whatever they're doing on their 17 ounces of food a day or whatever they get, when you see large portions of delicious food, you expect to be satisfied. And the foods that I mentioned that have the lowest caloric density, the fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and legumes, well, first of all, they also have the highest nutrient density. But what they have that animal products and processed foods don't have is they have fiber and they have water. You see, animal products and processed food have no fiber and have no water, which means you're going to overeat on them. Because when you eat foods, whole plant foods, with their fiber and water intact, fiber and water together creates what's known as bulk. Sort of like if you imagine taking a sponge and putting it in water and that sponge expands. Well, bulk is what creates satiety, which tells you to stop eating. You know, we have these mechanisms of satiety. We have stretch receptors, nutrient receptors, and calorie receptors. Well, when you're eating most of your calories from animal products and processed food, there's no fiber, so you can't activate your mechanisms of satiety, your stretch receptors, until you eat an unthinkable amount of calories. And since animal products and processed food also have no nutrients, you never activate your nutrient receptors, again, being driven to overeat on calories. And so when you eat the foods that are lowest in calorie density, highest in nutrient density, with their fiber and water intact, not you know, making juices out of them, things like that, you get so full so quickly and so satisfied, and it makes it so easy to lose weight with a full plate.
Wow, did you get it? Did you get all that, everybody? That was a big mouthful. Just let's breathe for a moment and digest all that. That was amazing. I made a few notes while you were talking because I wanted to circle back to some of those thoughts. And the first thing is, when we tell people to go oil-free, many people who have never heard of it before just have that deer in headlights look. Like, I can't imagine not consuming oil. I can't cook with oil. And then of course, as soon as they try it or taste it, they realize how unnecessary it is. It's all of these extra hidden unnecessary calories. And it's funny because we've been doing this for a while now in my home, and my partner Gary and I, we both cook, and I made a couple of stir fries yesterday, and he said to me, did you use oil making these dishes? And of course I didn't. But, you know, it's so easy to put flavor in foods. You don't miss oil. Period.
Right. But do you know that actually oil masks the taste of the food? And Chef Ramses Bravo, the executive chef of True North, does an experiment in front of people to show what he's talking about. Oil actually coats the taste buds of your tongue. And when you eat oil, you have to use so much more salt to taste the food because it actually, it's like a blanket on your tongue. And so when you stop using oil, it makes it easy to either eliminate or reduce the amount of salt. And he does this experiment where he makes these salad dressings with or without, and people can really understand that, no, it's really coating the taste buds of your tongue. Now, you know, think about it. Like, even when I grew up, I don't remember my mom, I'm almost 60 years old, using that much oil. I mean, oil obviously was used to fry, but it's a pretty recent phenomenon, people, you know, eating oil. When people say, oh, oil's healthy, well, here's the thing. If you really believe that oil is healthy, anything that's in that olive oil, wouldn't it be in the olive that it came from? But when you process olives, which are about, I think, 500 or 600 calories per pound, into olive oil, you make it calorie-rich and nutrient-poor, and any beneficial component of that olive, the whole natural food, the water, the fiber, the vitamins, the minerals, the phytochemicals, the antioxidants, the micronutrients, these are thrown away in the processing, and you're left with the non-nutritive portion of the food. You know, when you ask people the definition of a junk food, they'll often say, well, it's a food that's high in calories and low in nutrients, and people often cite sugar as being a junk food. Well, sugar's only 1,800 calories a pound. Oil is more than twice as calorically dense as sugar. Now, why do people like it? Well, I can tell you why they like it, because we're genetically hardwired to prefer the most concentrated source of calories for survival. And there's a neurotransmitter that's released in the brain anytime we have a pleasurable experience. It's called dopamine. And the two most pleasurable experiences for pretty much all species are eating and having sexual activity. Well, you know, if oil is 4,000 calories a pound as opposed to the 100 calories a pound that your steamed kale is, you're going to get a lot more hit of this dopamine from eating these concentrated calories from fat. And so people say that they like these foods better because really they're producing more dopamine in the brain. And so what's happened is we've become addicted to this artificial stimulation of dopamine from these high-fat, high-calorie, unnatural foods that didn't exist in nature. And so I say to people, you know, even before I focused on weight loss, I focused on being unprocessed because even when I was overweight, I didn't believe we should be eating processed food. One of my heroes was Jack LaLanne, and before he said many times before he died, 13 words that always stuck with me, which was, if God made it, eat it. If man made it, don't eat it. There is no sugar in nature. There's fruit. There is no oil in nature. There's fat, like nuts and seeds and avocado, which, by the way, were seasonal and our ancestors didn't eat tons of them, certainly not every day. And there's really no salt in nature. There's green vegetables that are salty. And so people really have got addicted to, you know, eating a diet high sugar, high fat, high salt, and in combination with each other. You know, what's interesting, Karen, is in nature, our ancestors never had sugar, fat, and salt together. But when people say they're addicted to sugar, it's not Twizzlers. I don't know anybody that goes to Gummy Bears Anonymous. It's sugar with fat. And people say, oh, I'm such a salt addict. People aren't addicted to steamed broccoli with some sea salt sprinkled on top. It's salt and fat, like potato chips and French fries. So we were never designed to eat sugar, fat, and salt together. In nature, it never happened, and this is a very recent phenomenon. And there's been many wonderful books written on sugar, fat, and salt and how addictive they were. Dr. David Kessler, he was the head of the FDA when Bill Clinton was president, and he wrote a book called The End of Overeating, which explained how sugar and fat and salt are addictive on their own, but even more so in combination with each other, which is basically what restaurant food and processed food was. And a couple of years after that book came out, there was an investigative journalist who was a Pulitzer Prize-winning author named Michael Moss, who wrote an amazing book called Salt, Sugar, and Fat, How the Food Giants Hooked Us, where they actually interviewed people from the processed food industry. You know, a lot of times they wouldn't say their name, and they said that they didn't even know they had such a hyper-palatable, addictive product on their hand. And, you know, do you think it's any surprise that these processed food industries are owned by the tobacco industry? Do you think there's a coincidence there?
Duh.
Yeah.
I want to go back to Dr. Doug Lyle's math or emotional problem with you. And I love anything that's a math problem. So I was glad to hear that we could frame caloric density as a math problem when it comes to weight. But what about emotional problems? Emotional problems seem to be one of the biggest factors with people and weight loss.
Absolutely. And I'm not discounting that people don't have them, and I have them too. But I would ask them to at least look at the other side and look at some of the videos that I've done on my YouTube page, Chef AJ, with Dr. Lyle, where he's addressed emotional eating. There's a place in Santa Rosa, California that's been there over 30 years called the True North Health Center. It's a medically supervised water-only fasting center that was founded by Dr. Alan Goldhammer, who is the co-author of The Pleasure Trap with Dr. Lyle. Now, people go there for various reasons. It's not just from being overweight. They often have autoimmune disease or heart disease or diabetes that they're trying to reverse through water fasting. But you don't actually have to water fast there. I never did. You can just eat this ad libitum style and be an unrestricted feeder. People go there with varying degrees of mental health and emotional health. Yet when they're at the center, they all lose weight. When you change your environment and you change your behavior, and I'm not saying that horrible things haven't happened to people in the past, myself included, trauma, but that is not the primary reason you're overweight. It's the food. It's the food. Now, sure, can stress or emotions cause you to eat things that maybe, you know, wouldn't serve you? Absolutely. But if you had a clean environment, which is what I recommend in the Ultimate Weight Loss Program, I have a saying, if it's in your house, it's in your mouth. If you had healthy food ready at all times and there were no alternatives, you still could be healthy and lean regardless of any emotional things that happened to you in the past or the present. So I'm not saying it's not important, but it's not the reason that you're overweight today.
It's a tough problem because people can change their environment, and when they do that, they need to progressively change their habits and their behaviors. Because when a trigger comes along, no matter where you are, it could lead you back to your old comfort zone, which could be binging or eating certain foods that you know you shouldn't eat.
Absolutely.
I can't speak on the subject because I have never had a weight problem. I think I'm a pretty emotionally together person, and I work to help people as often as I can, but I am not in the head of people who have had all kinds of abuse or trauma or whatever it is that causes emotional eating. Mm-hmm. It's a tough one.
Yeah, and I'm not diminishing it. I really am. I hope I'm not coming off saying, well, you know, just change the food. I think that people that have had trauma and abuse absolutely should get help for it. But I think that if they could just listen to some of the lectures that Dr. Lyle has given on emotional eating, knowing that you know, that's one path. You still need to change the food. You know what I'm saying? You want to get treatment, and you want to also change the food. You want to do both, in other words. And there are people that really have believed that, no, that this is the reason I'm overweight. I have this horrible thing happen. I have this stress in my life. You know, let me talk about stress for a minute, because even people who didn't have abuse or trauma, most people do have stress, Karen, at some time in their life. Most of us don't live an idyllic, stress-free life. But what I want to say, one of the most important things I would say to everybody, whether they're overweight or not, just if they want to eat healthy foods, is preparation trumps motivation. And so where stress can be a problem is that you get knocked off your healthy routine. So, for example, like a lot of people say, well, you know, my dog died, or there was a death in the family or an illness, and then I started gaining weight. Yes, was it sad? Absolutely. But a lot of times what happens is stress puts us in a time crunch. So when we have this elderly parent that now is diagnosed with Alzheimer's and we're spending 4 hours a day tending to them, we often neglect ourselves. We forget to exercise. We forget to prep our healthy food. So what I think happens is stress makes us more vulnerable to the pleasure trap, to these foods, because we don't have as much time to prepare.
This is all true. And I'm feeling it the last 2 weeks. I've had 4 people die that I know that are close to me. And I'm currently remotely managing my mom, who has dementia. And that's an interesting project. But when I do visit her, I always make lots of healthy food and I put it in her freezer and do the shopping for her. And at least I know I have something to eat, and then she can always eat whatever it is she chooses to eat. Yeah, stress is a big factor, not just for weight issues, but for all chronic diseases. Stress should not be put aside or ignored. It affects our entire body. And a little bit of stress is good when we're exercising, for example, and maybe we're walking or we're running or we're doing something. If we stress ourselves for a few seconds or a minute or something, that teaches the body to handle stress in certain ways. But continuous chronic stress will lead to chronic illness.
Yeah.
Let's go to one of my favorite new subjects, the ketogenic diet. Do you have any thoughts on the ketogenic diet?
Well, I know it's not good for you. I'm not a doctor, but I just interviewed for the Real Truth About Weight Loss Summit 34 experts, most of them medical doctors, and it's horrible. You will lose weight very quickly, you know, but you'll lose weight quickly if you, you know, get addicted to cocaine or do chemotherapy. That is not the diet consistent with our species' natural history. We just didn't eat a bunch of fat. You know, we're naturally, I mean, we're herbivores. We're not, what would you call that, eating a bunch of fat? Fativores? I don't eat.
there's a good one, fativores.
Bizarre. Yeah, I mean, that is the most, I mean, you know, as much as I dislike some of these other diets, like the paleo diet, I mean, at least they're letting you have, you know, some semblance of what I would consider normal food. But that is just, that is crazy. You know, Brenda Davis, this wonderful plant-based dietitian, has a wonderful YouTube on this where she deconstructs both the paleo and the keto diet. I mean, you know, even if it were healthy, which it isn't, I can't imagine it being satisfying. You know, not eating fruits and vegetables and whole grains and legumes and potatoes. I cannot imagine a worse diet other than maybe just that. There's a new one now called the carnivore diet where I guess they just eat a bunch of meat. I mean, ooh, you know, I mean, that's what makes life delicious is the starch, it's the complex carbohydrates, the potatoes, rice, and beans. Without that, how can anyone ever feel satisfied, let alone be healthy, you know?
One of the funny things that I heard with someone who was struggling on a paleo type of diet is he kept thinking of different ways to make bread because he was just craving carbohydrates. I'm talking... Mm-hmm. Let's not even talk about bread. Let's just talk about whole carbohydrates, whole food carbohydrates. Anyway, he kept thinking, how could I make something like bread? And he was thinking, could I make it out of tofu? Could I make it just, well, I don't think you can have beans in paleo. Who knows? There's so many different shades. But it's funny to see some of the foods that have come out that are considered paleo or acceptable to kind of satisfy, quote, satisfy the cravings people are having on those diets that really aren't ideal for us.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, I've been asking this question of a lot of people. What have you learned more recently that's new or insightful about healthy eating that you didn't know when you got started, let's say 40 plus years ago?
Well, interestingly enough, I think this is not actually about food. It is affected, though. But what I've been learning from some of the doctors I interviewed, like Dr. Doug Lyle and Dr. Linda Carney, is that caffeine isn't as benign as we thought in terms of health or weight loss. It's not the most horrible thing in the world. So I don't want people to think, oh, gosh, another thing I have to give up. Is Dr. Lyle says it's a minor sin. But for people that are struggling with weight loss, it really can have some effects on you, you know, because it disrupts your sleep, and that makes it often harder, you know, for people to stay on a healthy eating path. People think that a cup of coffee in the morning, it's like it's no big deal. But with caffeine, and I've interviewed two sleep doctors now, and that caffeine in the morning, caffeine has a 17-hour half-life. Even if you drink in decaf, there's still about 25% of that caffeine. And it really can disrupt your ability to have deep sleep so that you don't wake up feeling refreshed in the morning, and it becomes like a vicious cycle. And what I learned from Dr. Linda Carney is that it can actually cause you to store fat. And she talked about the mechanism. I'm not going to be able to explain this to you the way she did, but that for some people, especially women, it can actually cause you to store fat. And I'm like, wow. And that it can actually cause people to have cravings, particularly in the afternoon, for sugar, which is when a lot of people, quote, fall off their diet. So I thought that was pretty interesting, that there actually is some effects to it for some people, you know, especially those struggling with weight.
Yeah, coffee and caffeine. I have a data point of one. My partner, Gary, he drank coffee a lot, and then he moved to tea and would drink a lot of tea, and then he completely stopped, and he had sleep problems. And it took about a month for all of that to clear away, the anxiety and the sleep problems, and it definitely was caffeine-related. What I'd like to see, and I haven't seen, is because there are mixed, the research is mixed, the studies are mixed, where some show that coffee drinking will help with Alzheimer's and other chronic diseases. But I don't think those studies were done on people eating an SOS-free whole food plant diet.
Right.
And maybe if we compared people eating what we consider a healthy diet and then some other diets and the impact of coffee and caffeine on all of them, we might see a different picture.
Yeah, none of the studies that people tout are ever done on people that eat like us. It would be really, like in the ones that say, you know, people, vegans that eat nuts live longer, nobody's ever studied me or people that eat like me. You know what I mean? I don't think because there's enough of them.
Well, we're slowly taking over. I think we'll start to see more information. Okay, now let's talk about your upcoming series, The Real Truth About Weight Loss.
Why? Because I want people to know the real truth. Because if people are still saying, well, what about the keto diet? They don't know the real truth yet. And so I am so passionate about people knowing the truth, because I do believe the truth will set them free if they want this information. Some people are happy just eating the way they are and being the way they are. And again, this is not about vanity. This, the most important thing I learned, and I want to say this, is it's not to shame or blame anyone for being overweight, because you're going to learn if you listen to this free summit, March 16th to 24th, that if you are overweight or obese, it is not your fault. but that it's not just about health at every size, because there is a risk being overweight. And we're not talking about being obese or morbidly obese, but even being like 30 pounds overweight, which pretty much most Americans are now, you know, over 75%, depending on who you talk to. Dr. Furman says it's more like 90% are overweight or obese. But there are risks, that there are 16 cancers that are prevalent in people that are overweight, that your risk of type 2 diabetes is something like 60 times greater when you're overweight. And you don't have to be, like I said, obese, even, you know, carrying an extra 20, 30 pounds. And so the experts shared the research. A lot of the research that the experts share was research that they did, like people like Dr. Barnard. And it was just amazing that I never thought about that. I always thought about the people that come to me for weight loss. They're usually women, and they want to lose weight, you know, for their daughter's wedding and for their high school reunion. I never really thought about the dire health risks that are associated with being overweight. And these doctors will shed the real truth on this. And it was interviewing, you know, I had met Dean Ornish, but to be able to interview him, you know, such an honor. And doctors that are plant-based, that maybe are lesser known, like Dr. Terry Shintani from Hawaii, that just know this information and have been utilizing it in their practice for 40 years and helping people all over the globe. And I really think it's going to be mind-blowing for many people, especially people that are still thinking, well, maybe low carb is good and maybe animal products is good. One of the things that all the experts agreed on is that when you eat the diet that you and I eat, the diet we recommend, a whole food plant-based diet, either with no sugar, oil, salt, or, you know, limited, you know, not that everybody has to do 100%, but when you eat a whole food plant-based diet, the diet that you eat that is going to help reverse any disease you have, like type 2 diabetes or heart disease or autoimmune disease, that is the diet that is going to help you lose weight, so that you don't need to have this diet for weight loss and this diet for diabetes and this diet for lupus. That there really is not much that a whole food plant-based diet can do. And that when you eat in a manner to experience optimal health, disease prevention and disease reversal, the weight does fall off. That you don't have to focus on weight loss. That when you focus on health, the weight loss will happen.
Period. Amen. Yep. Beautiful. The dates are March 16th, the 25th?
Right. March 16th to March 24th. It'll go from a Saturday to a Sunday. I believe that's 8 days, so there'll be about four interviews a day, a couple of days. Let's see, I'm bad at math. It's like 3 to 4 a day. You know I'm bad at math. That's how I got overweight, because I didn't understand calorie density, but I really am bad at math. I was always dyslexic with numbers, so I am bad at math. But it's Saturday, March 16th to Sunday, March 24th. Absolutely free to sign up and to watch and to listen, and I think people are really going to enjoy this. And, you know, we have mostly doctors, but there were some people that were influencers, people that lost not tremendous amounts of weight, the weight themselves, and that will share their story with you. And, you know, doctors, dietitians. We have Chris Wark from Chris Beat Cancer. While he's never been overweight, he sure knows the cancer risk from being overweight. Fabulous interview. I enjoyed it. It really, you know, was one of my greatest pleasures in life to get to talk one-on-one to these people, like sitting down in your own living room, and it's like, wow, I get to talk to you. Wow, this is like, oh, Dr. McDougall was the last one I actually interviewed, and just, you know, it's like he's been saying it for 40 years, and I'm thinking, why do they put Butter is Back on Time magazine instead of Dr. McDougall and a potato? Because, I mean, it's, you know, weight loss is simple. Now, it's not always easy. I agree. We have stress. We have busy lives. But it's really very simple. Eat fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and legumes. Take a walk around the block. Get in the sun. And get a good night's sleep. And that, it really is that simple. Is it easy? Not for everyone. But that's really all you have to do.
It is mind-blowingly simple. And mind-blowing that it's so hard to convey this information to the masses. But we're getting there. It's happening. Uh-huh. The food continuum, the average is moving towards plants. We're getting a lot more press than we ever did before. Plant-based and vegan, these are regular vocabulary words in most people's conversations. We're on TV shows and movies. There's always some quirky vegan character. that maybe the story's making fun of. But at least we're there, making headway.
Absolutely.
Okay, last question for you. Do you have a favorite food or favorite dish?
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, you know, people ask that a lot when I do these summits, like if I was on a desert island. I got to say sweet potatoes, especially the Hana Yam or the Japanese sweet potatoes. I could eat sweet potatoes, but I do eat sweet potatoes every day, every way, mashed, baked, boiled, broiled, steamed, boiled, microwaved, air fried. I mean, I could live on them, like the Okinawans who eat something like 72% of their calories from them. I find them incredibly satisfying and delicious and satiating. And boy, I mean, a life without potatoes to me would just be an existence.
I'm right there with you. I'm nuts over sweet potatoes, purple potatoes, and I think it's the Japanese ones. One of them, it's a light yellow, and it's like candy. So sweet.
Oh, my
sweet.
God. That's
sometimes
the hand.
Even
that's
too
like,
sweet.
It's sometimes too sweet. You're right.
Yes, and you know what's great about them, too? You were mentioning about eating fiber and bulk. When you eat sweet potatoes, everything moves in
You're not
and
kidding,
out.
You know? Absolutely.
Moves. It's a smooth move.
Absolutely.
Okay. Very good, Chef AJ. You are a powerhouse of information. Very wonderful information, and I'm so glad you're out there doing what you're doing. I'm excited about the real truth about weight loss, and I hope millions of people take the opportunity to tune in because there's so much there to learn. Thank you for joining me on It's All About Food.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure talking to you, Karen, and thank you for what you're doing, getting the word out.
Yes, lots of food words. Here we go. Thanks again.
All right, take care.
Okay, bye. Wow, was that something? So that's the real truth about weight loss with Chef AJ. And I will be putting a link at responsibleeatingandliving.com if you want to know more about it. I think you should. It's going to be a really excellent program. Okay, we have about 10 minutes left. And I just wanted to tell you about my week. So I am in the Bay Area in San Jose, California. As you may know, my partner Gary just finished directing Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream, which was lovely. And at the same time, we lost his dad about a couple of weeks ago, and we're planning a funeral coming up. So a lot of life activities going on. And as we were talking earlier, no matter what happens, no matter what stressful thing or upsetting thing may occur in your life, it's not really an opportunity to stop eating healthfully. It's even a greater time to focus on you and strengthening you. You deserve this. And you can see what I've been eating all week in my blog, What Vegans Eat. I'm nuts about sweet potatoes, as I just said, and purple sweet potatoes have been our go-to. We have three big baskets of sweet potatoes right now, all colors, and we have them almost every day. I recently created what I'm calling Purple Rain Soup. Now, this is not the Purple Rain that Prince talks about, which is the combination of blood and blue in the sky. No, this is a easy to make soup. Just cut up in chunks purple sweet potatoes with some tofu and red onion and water, and you cook it together until everything is soft and it has a really gorgeous magenta purple broth. And this I could live on for an infinite amount of time. It's just easy and fabulous. And then a while back, I mentioned eating beans for breakfast. Do you eat beans for breakfast? You know, you can eat whatever you want for breakfast if you're eating a whole food plant diet. So just because our culture is used to eating cereals or whole grains, preferably, like oats, and I have plenty of rolled oats and steel-cut oats for breakfast, but sometimes I'm in the mood for savory, and I really enjoy eating beans for breakfast. Sometimes I want to give them a sweeter flavor, and I made a recipe a while back called breakfast black beans. Who remembers it? Raise your hand. I added cocoa powder to it and gave it a chocolatey taste. And I think I sweetened it with apricots or something like that. Anyway, I wanted to do something similar, but I didn't have any cocoa powder. We're traveling. We don't have our kitchen with us. And someone had given me a dark chocolate bar, and I thought for a moment of melting some of the dark chocolate in there, but it had sugar, maybe a little bit because it's dark chocolate, but I really didn't want to put that in my breakfast black beans. But I added the purple sweet potato, and after I made it and I was eating it, I could taste chocolate. There was no chocolate in there, but I tasted it. Was it the purple sweet potatoes? I don't know. It was just amazing. Am I nutty? Maybe. I'm the one who said purple sweet potatoes taste like donuts to me. So it could all be just me and my crazy palate. But maybe it's because I don't eat oil and salt, which coats your taste buds and allows you to taste all kinds of flavors in foods, right? Maybe taste a chocolatey flavor without having the chocolate. Anyway, you might want to try it. I think you should. Okay. So I mentioned earlier in the program that there are so many experts out there, and we talked about how some experts are promoting something and then a couple of years later or whatever, they fall off the wagon or they completely flip 180 degrees. This is really troublesome because people are confused when it comes to healthy diets, nutrition, healthy lifestyle. We're in an age of so much information, and it's wonderful. The internet is wonderful. The World Wide Web, so much information out there. But unless you spend day and night focusing on a particular subject like food, like I do, or like Chef AJ does, it can be overwhelming. I know. I also spend time working for different clients, vetting certain programs for them, and I get to read and watch a lot of webinar series and give my reviews for them. And so many of them are promoting foods, promoting diets, promoting herbs, promoting diagnostic tools that have not been shown to be beneficial. And it's scary because especially if you're in need, if you're in a health crisis, you need good information. I do my best to share with you information that is true, has been demonstrated, is reputable. And if you have any concerns or questions, you're always free to email me, info@realmeals.org. But it is, like I said, troublesome that there are so many programs out there that are giving misinformation, and people really, really believe. And this is, again, where the, oh, what's the word I'm looking for? It's just slipped my mind. Somebody help me. When you believe something will work, you have a positive benefit. And we see that a lot with certain programs or foods, for example, that have not really demonstrated anything scientifically, but people believe it. They want to believe it. And that's great because mind is a powerful thing. And I want to leave you with this thought about the mind being a powerful thing. You're feeling stress. You're feeling anxiety. You're feeling all kinds of emotional things. The most beneficial thing you could do right now in this moment is breathe. Concentrate on breathing. Everything quiets down. Taking in a breath, letting it go. Feeling that breath go to every part of your body. Going to places that may be tense or tight or sore. Breathing has so much benefit. So I want you to breathe. And when you're confused or reading something and you want to know if it's real or true, breathe. It will really help clear things for you. You can also email me and ask me what I think, and I'm happy to give you an opinion about it. I can't tell you how often breathing has made a tremendous difference. You know, when you can feel the tension coming, things are racing, you've got a lot going on, not enough time, stop and breathe. It's amazing. We all have enough time. There is no time. That's what I like to say. You can do whatever it is you need to do. Just do it and breathe. That's what I want to leave you with today. And one more thing I wanted to talk about when it comes to food. So you're hearing people like myself and Chef AJ and many others talk about all the delicious food that we love. And maybe you're thinking you're bored with this healthy eating. And we recommend eating big salads. And maybe you're bored with salads. I'm never bored with salads. But there are ways to make salads interesting. I want you to love salad as much as I do. So there are ways you can make salad that's easy. You can grab greens in a bag and put it in a bowl. Or you can buy a fresh head and wash it and spin it dry in a salad spinner, whatever works for you. But it doesn't always have to be the same green. It can be a butter lettuce. It can be a romaine lettuce. It can be a Napa cabbage or a red cabbage. It can be kale. It can be collard greens. There are many different kinds of greens, watercress even. You can mix them up. Arugula is another example. Don't eat the same lettuce or greens or reds. I don't know why we call them all greens, because there are reds that can be used in salads too, right? Like radicchio and red cabbage. There are so many out there. And then just a little raw onion, maybe some chopped olives, maybe even some berries. I usually put frozen berries in my salad because I have access to them, and it doesn't take very long for them to defrost. A few raw nuts and seeds. If I don't have time to make a dressing, I splash balsamic vinegar on it. Otherwise, we blend a seed with a vinegar or a citrus, and we have a nice creamy dressing. It doesn't have to be that complicated, and it's always delicious. I want to leave you with that. You've been listening to It's All About Food. My guest today was Chef AJ talking about the real truth about weight loss. I hope you check out her upcoming webinar. Visit my website, responsibleeatingandliving.com, my blog, What Vegans Eat. And if you have questions, you can email me at info@realmeals.org. Have a delicious week, everybody.